I'm always privileged with speaking after usually someone else, and as you know, they choose the topic, and then we go from there, and so sometimes you are not certain what someone has in mind. Roger did send me some things about what he was going to talk about, and then sent me a title basically for mine. I kind of shortened his title a little bit, but not much. But I certainly appreciate the thoughts that he brought out, and we're going to add to that a little bit. He wanted me to actually talk about that. As he talked about, how we eat today, though, can be reflective of how we learned to eat when we were younger. That's one of our problems, is that we have set things in already in motion. So that's why it's difficult for us. When he's talking about starving sin, actually, he used about us eating, but in reality, we have to eat. But what he's talking about is starving the things that we don't need in our bodies, and that's one of our problems. We want those things, and I've actually had people say to me, and I just want to bring this up, that, well, God created all these herbs and all these things, and they're all good for us, and we know better than that. That is not true. Some things can be mind-altering. We don't want to use those, and they're natural to this earth. All you have to do is take them and smoke them or do some other things with them, and they'll alter your mind. Some other things are poisonous. We want to stay away from those as well, but he put them here. He expects us to understand these things about our bodies. But with sin, always poisonous, always mind-altering, always damaging to us, always a problem in our lives. We don't need sin to survive. Actually, we need to stay away from sin to survive. So we need to think about that. Well, we feed ourselves in a way that makes us feel good. He talked about that, and we just feel good about that. I mean, it's that food that just... We talk about comfort foods, and it's true. They're out there. And so that's what happens a lot of times with sin. But it's not always good for us. We tend to do what makes us feel good. We're very selfish in that respect. I mean, I like things, you like things, and we all talk about them. And those things that he talked about that he likes to eat, I don't like those at all. They would never sell them if it was left up to me, because I just don't like them. But that doesn't mean that I don't help the free market in other ways that I shouldn't. How do we combat those sinful practices then in our lives? And too many times, sin becomes like a feeding frenzy. We just can't get enough of it. We just absolutely need it. We have some God-given desires, and we use that for an excuse. Well, I feel hungry, or I need, and we do them. And that prompts us to do things in this life. And so we need to continue, and we have to live, and we have to enjoy this life. But when those desires he talked about from James 1 turns to lust, we satisfy ourselves rather than tempering our needs, then it turns to sin, and that becomes a problem. The old thing about, are we eating to live or living to eat? And there's a using what he was talking about. And he used that from James 1, 13 through 15. You've been studying Ecclesiastes for some time on Wednesday night. Ecclesiastes 2. It was a feeding frenzy for Solomon. He built that, he needed more. That was beautiful. He tried this, he needed more. And he's trying to point out from that, that you can never satisfy a physical desire for things that aren't right. They become not right, even things that are right, when that becomes our idol or our God. And that's a problem. So we're going to continue with those thoughts that Roger started. And like that, we're just like animals. So he asked me to talk about just stop feeding sin. So how is that possible? So I'm going to use some examples of this, and I'm going to talk about sin as he talked about it. So let's talk about those rules of feeding. When we talk about children, we have rules about feeding them. Now, we didn't think those up. God set those in place. You know what they are? You can't give them meat when they're born. They have no teeth. They have no way of digesting it. And it just isn't going to work. We understand clearly you've got to give them some liquid that can go into their body. And we also understand the best liquid to put in their body. So we totally understand that. We are not going to give them something to poison those little bodies. I'm talking about all the norms here, not the idiots out there and the people that are crazy. I'm talking about what we understand and know. So did God set rules for us about our feeding ourselves? Well, certainly He did. We don't feed sin. There's some things that there's prohibitions against. Like in Ephesians 5, He talks about the works of the flesh. I'm not going to give them to you. You know what they are. But in 19 through 21, He lists several of those things and He says, do not do these things. And we've read those, and every one of us have looked at those, and we said, uh-oh, I did that. Or I did that. or did that? Because as we read those words, we realize there's other scriptures about those things, and although we may not have completed that action, we thought about that action. And thus we have said, And there's other things they're just flat out no authority for. In Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, or do by His authority. I must have authority for it. Now what am I talking about here? As much as Congress and the United States Senate and the House of Representatives and the President would like to have a rule for everything, it's impossible. They try. And every time they make one of them big books about a law, you know what they end up doing? They have to add to it because, whoops, missed that one. Because you know what they didn't do? Well, there were certain things in there that there's no authority given one way or the other. So they think, well, but what they don't realize is that even if there's not a rule for me to go and jump off of a bridge, I don't have authority to go jump off of a bridge. You see, they don't have to tell me everything. There's just some things I should know. Like going down the highway, they don't have to put every 16 feet, do not go into the other people's lane over there. There's just some things they don't need to do because we know that's we have no authority to do that. We ought to be driving down the wrong way. Then there's some things that are lawful, but they're just not expedient. They're not helpful. They're not beneficial at a given time. There are certain things in 1 Corinthians 6, 12 and 13. Roger alluded to this passage. And as you go through this passage, you can see that. Now, Paul is not saying that all things are lawful for me. He's using how maybe other people were viewing things that, well, God didn't make any rules. Or maybe what he's saying is that everything that God has said I can do, I can do. Those things are all lawful for me, but they're not always helpful. And the reason I believe that's the first thing that he's the thing he's talking about is because he talked about the fact that he could eat certain kinds of meats, but he wouldn't do it. Because it wasn't helpful. It wasn't beneficial. It wasn't a good thing to do. So that I might have the right, not have to do something. I might have the right to do something, but it will not be helpful if I do it. It might be lawful, but by me doing it, I might actually lead someone else to sin. That doesn't sound right, but it is right in Romans 14. He talks about various things that we have to be really careful with. It might be some things with food. It might be some things with our actions. It might be some things with the way we present ourselves. It might be some things we can take advantage of fully. But by me so doing, I would cause someone else, and the word offense there, it's not because I offended them in the sense I made them feel bad. It's because I have offended them in causing them to do something they normally wouldn't have done, and thus I've led them into sin. Now, these are difficult, the last ones, aren't they? I don't have a problem with things that are prohibited, do you? But you know most people do. Even though I know they're wrong, I may get involved in them, but I know they're wrong. I don't even argue that point. We struggle a lot over things we have no authority for because someone says it's right even though we have no authority for it. We struggle with that. We struggle with things that are lawful but not expedient. We struggle with things that are lawful that cause other people to sin. So how do we make application to all of this and not feeding to this sin? Well, this is a good rule. Abstain from every form of evil. Now there's a broader meaning to that, I think, in this passage, but let's just use that. Abstain from every. Now what Roger was saying about starving is, if you know you have a problem with certain things, and he's talking about food, you just stay away from it. And he said that's not easy when your spouse brings it into the house and puts it right in front of you, didn't he? So there's a lot involved in this. But when we have this, abstain from every form of evil, he's not saying it's a good idea to just kind of, it's just stop feeding it. Just avoid it. Don't even get near it. You got a problem? Stay away from it. Sounds all easy, doesn't it? We know this is not. Let's talk about this. Let's avoid the foods that cause the sin. I was in a restaurant the other day by myself. The reason I mentioned that, because I wasn't trying to overhear the conversation behind me. I just could not hear the conversation behind me. It was two women talking. I did not, the whole time I was sitting there, hear one good word come out of their mouth. Their whole speech everything they talked about, the vulgarity they used, the way they were putting other people down, all of the things they were talking about, there was nothing. It was rottenness that they were talking about. I said I wanted to get up and turn around and say something, but after I'd heard them for a while, I was fearful of the fact they might attack me out in the parking lot. But I just wanted to encourage them. You know, I wanted to turn around and just say, isn't it a beautiful day out? Isn't this some good food we're getting to eat? You know, I mean, it's shameful. But let me tell you how we feed on this. We feed on it. We know gossip's prohibited. 1 Timothy 5:13, he talks about the woman that, you know, about that young woman and how you want her to be occupied. But young men, you want them to be occupied. You know why? Because our mouths get in the way. We want to talk. And our conversations, and I've said it before, you know, when it gets to be 80% about other people, there's a problem there somewhere. And it's okay that we were saying positive things, but how many times are we not? The filthy talk, just prohibited. Colossians 3:8, nothing filthy should come out of your mouth, he says. And people go, I don't know what's filthy. Really? I mean, I've said that word itself. It's just like, ooh, you just don't even want to say it. It's just like it's dirty when you say filthy. We know. And yet it comes out of people's mouths that are Christians. God's name in vain. It was prohibited in the Old Testament. And in Exodus 20 verse 7, he said, don't do it. And if you do, you'll die. Now, it's not said that way in the New Testament. What he says in the New Testament is where he doesn't give up authority to do it, in which he says, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind, and then love thy neighbors thyself. That eliminates using the tongue in that way. And it may be lawful sometimes to talk about things, but they're not helpful. It is amazing to me how sometimes in my mouth I start saying things, and I think later, that wasn't helpful at all. At the time I was saying it, I thought, that's pretty good. And then I left and I thought, there was a lot of words there, and I'm not sure that was very helpful. In 1 Timothy 5, he talks about a group of things. I know I've got the wrong place there, so don't go to that one. 1 Timothy 1. I do have it up there, right, at least. 5 through 11. He talks about the old law. And he talks about people. There's nothing wrong with that old law. It was a good law. But he talks about people that went back to that old law and they're misrepresenting it, bringing it into this new law. You see, there was nothing wrong with talking about it, but he said they don't even know what they're talking about. So sometimes we need to be careful. We're talking about something that is good, but it isn't helpful because we're not expressing it in the right way. We're not using it the right way. And he goes on to say that, but we know that the law is good in verse 8 if one uses it lawfully. That is in the proper way. So the law was good. It's the misuse or how we do. And it may be lawful, but it causes other people to sin. In Proverbs 17:9, there may be a matter between me and someone else, and I don't mean anything by it when I say something about that. But in Proverbs 17:19, he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates the best of friends or separates friends. In and of itself, it might not be a problem in saying that, but the end result may end up with a very bad situation. And it may cause sin between me and someone else simply because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. It just gets out of control. In James 3, he talks about this, and I love Roger's analogies and all the little things that he uses to bring forth in our mind. So I'll just use the one he used in verse 6. He didn't use this passage, but how he used it. And a tongue is a fire. When we start feeding it, we pour in the gasoline on it. And I'll tell you what we do with our tongues. We just somehow... My dad always said, God gave us two things to shut the tongue up. Clench the teeth and close the lips. Now, there's some people still able to say some words. I don't know how they do it. I don't know if they can... ventriloquists, but I can't do that. And it is a good idea sometimes just to clench the teeth. And if you ever wanted to say something back and you were smarter than you thought you were at that moment and you kept your mouth shut and you thought later, that was some good wisdom on my part. That's rare, but it does happen every once in a while. And this just gets out of control. He says, no man can tame the tongue. He says, out of your mouth you're blessing God and you're cursing your fellow man. He said, it just shouldn't be that way. It just shouldn't be that way. That wisdom is from below, not from above. Sexual things. We know fornication is just prohibited. It's not even allowed. We shouldn't feed it at all. There should never be in our life anything about that. We know that it's to be between a man and a woman. We know in Matthew 5:32 that he comments on all of this. So I want to go back before we go to this and talk about this from 1 Corinthians 6. In 1 Corinthians 6, I want to read this real quickly, part of it. Foods for the stomach and the stomach for foods, but God will destroy both it and them. He starts out making a point about, yes, you do need food. And yes, you do need it for your stomach. But if food is the only thing, you want to do it any way you want to, and you just want to have food, remember one thing. There will come a time when there will be no stomach and there will be no food. That's going to end for you. So why would you be concentrating so much on that? To make the point further than he goes into about fornication. There are people who argued that from 1 Corinthians 5 that it was okay that a man had his father's wife and they were glorying in this. And he says, not so much, because the body is not for fornication or sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. What he's trying to do is change our focus so that we quit feeding sin. We look at ourselves and suddenly our desires are not that important anymore. We say, okay, I have to shut this desire off before it becomes sin. I have to make sure I don't do it. And he goes on to talk about if you do, if you commit fornication, it is as if you have become one with a harlot. So how can God then have anything to do with you when you have joined yourself in sin, when you have fed your desire, when you have not avoided a food that causes you a problem? All of these things. Andrew talked about this on Wednesday night. Romans 1:26, Romans 1:27, where it is prohibited for a woman to be with a woman sexually, a man to be with a man, or a man with a woman outside of marriage. It doesn't matter which case it is, or any other forms of fornication. Doesn't matter. It can be lawful, actually, to have your sexual desires satisfied in marriage, but not always helpful. You're going to go shake your head at that. That's what he said. In 1 Corinthians 7, Paul talked about the fact that it was quite lawful to be married. But there's times when it is not helpful. God would not allow Jeremiah to get married. Paul never got married. How did they not feed that desire? Well, because they never let it become sin. You see, what happens with this is that he said, I wish that all were like me. He wishes that all could control this desire and not ever let it become sin. And Paul is not patting himself on the back. Obviously, this was something he had good control over. And he says that there are times when it is good for people not to get married. And he talks about that in this chapter. How about some places? Psalm 1:1. How do I not feed my desire? I don't go places where I'm going to feed on my sin. In Psalm 1:1, he says, blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, stands in the way of sinners, sits in the seat of the scornful. He said, it is better not to go to those places where that's going to happen. That's pretty strong language there. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, stands in the way of sinners, and sits in the seat of the scornful. He's talking about us exercising ourselves. As Roger said, starve yourself. If that's something you want to do and that's the kind of people you want to be around, starve it. Avoid it at all costs. It's going to get you in trouble. There's none of us immune to this. You know how we pick up language? You know how we end up saying things sometimes and, oh, how we have these words now that suddenly have changed meaning and we pick them up? You know how we did that? We went to places. We heard them. We viewed places on television. We heard them. And after a while, it just came part of our language. And we said things that probably we went, ooh, I slipped out. It can be lawful, but it causes other people to sin. It was not sinful for Lot to go down and feed his animals there. But you know what it ended up doing? He lost his family as a result of it. You see, sometimes it's not a matter of what we want to do, but it can cause someone else to sin. It may be lawful, but sometimes it's just not helpful. In 2 Samuel 11, it was very lawful. It was very lawful for David to go up there on the top of his rooftop. There is absolutely no law about David going up on top of his rooftop. But let me tell you why it wasn't helpful to him. And it was not a good moment for him, because he looked out. And it was a woman on top of another rooftop or in a place where he could see her bathing. And he saw her, that she was very beautiful from where he was. And instead of getting down from there, he stayed there to the point that he fed his sin. And we all know the results of that sin. Seemed simple up front, didn't it? Didn't seem like such a bad thing. We need to avoid feeding those foods that cause sin. And how do we do that? Well, we satisfy a hunger that we have. We want to talk. All of us enjoy talking with one another. Let's pick some places. Number one, let's think about our speech. It needs to be of grace, seasoned with salt. Colossians 4:6. Not something that's tart and harmful. It needs to be proper for sound doctrine in Titus 2:1. Speak the things that become sound doctrine. We need to speak evil of no one. We need to be peaceable and gentle. And I use these because we've been studying Titus recently. And in Titus 3:2, speak evil of most no everyone. No, that's not what he says. Speak evil of no one. Be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. Don't feed it. Don't be quarrelsome in 2 Timothy 2:24 and 26, talking about us teaching someone else. Don't be quarrelsome. Be gentle. Be patient. Be humble. Think about that. He's saying, don't feed on that. It gets too easy to be that way, and don't do it. Satisfy it lawfully. How about our sexual desires? We were born with certain desires. They're lawful and beneficial, certain ones. And he says, I'll tell you how to do that in 1 Corinthians 7. You have those desires. You young people, every one of you are going to have desires. It is natural. God meant for you to have them. He meant for humans to repopulate the earth, to enjoy marriage, to enjoy all these things. Now, concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Then he makes rules about it. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. You want to prevent this hunger? Have it in the proper location, in the proper situation, and that'll take care of it. God said, see, I didn't give you a desire you can't satisfy in a proper way. I'm just going to tell you how to do it. Don't feed it wrongfully. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time. That may give yourself to fasting and prayer, as Roger talked about earlier, and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. You think God didn't know how strong the desires would be? You think He didn't understand that? So He said, so I'll provide a way. I'll provide a way. In marriage, the bed is undefiled, according to Hebrews 13:4. And how about our places that we go? And I told you I'm only using three examples is what Roger had talked about. I'm not sure this is what he had in mind, but it's kind of like it's what came to my mind. Places that are lawful and beneficial. You want to go somewhere where you can have some good things, hopefully said and done? How about our assemblies? How about considering one another to provoke into love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together? You know, we only meet here 4 hours a week, either in classes or assemblies. 168 hours leaves you 164. How do you feed yourself? How do you feed yourself? Psalm 122:1, I was happy when they said, let us go to the house of the Lord. How about social gatherings with other Christians? Good way to feed yourself. In ours, it's both ways. We also feed ourselves physically, but I was talking about spiritually here. Feeding ourselves so that we don't get sin in our lives. Well, they went from house to house daily. You think they didn't realize the need for this? You think they didn't understand this? I am so appreciative of so many of you women that use social media to encourage one another, to talk about God's Word. I'm not saying the men don't either, but I think women do this more frequently than men do. And it is beneficial, because basically you're not going from house to house, but you're going from at least this to that so that you can learn from one another. In our Bible studies, in Acts 19, 8 and 9, it says they met daily in the school of Tyrannus to study. We have to fill our time. We have a hunger. We'll satisfy it either through sin or through righteousness. We have a choice. And the wages of sin is death. But the gift of God is eternal life. And I thought of this when I was sitting back there and listening to Roger about, you know, our eating habits physically. And then that also can have effect on us spiritually and becomes a spiritual thing when God has already told us how to do that. In James 1, 21, it is interesting to me when he talks about the things that produce the wrath of God and being very careful in what we do. And he uses a term here that just came to me back there when Roger was talking about that. He said, starve the sin, feed the good. Therefore lay aside all filthiness, and the old King James said superfluity, and I always struggle with that word, but it's an overflow of wickedness. But he didn't stop there. So he said, now you've starved the sin. You've avoided it. So what do? And receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. As a Christian, I need to stay as far away from sin as I can. I need to really think about this. We're tempted with desire our entire lives. We're just born with natural desires, and those are fine. I was hungry from day one. I know I was. My mother used to talk about how I got her up to feed me. You know, it was natural. Things are natural. God made us that way, but He put laws around them. Proper nourishment is necessary for a healthy body. Proper spiritual nourishment is necessary for a healthy spiritual body. Now, am I feeding myself with sin? Or am I feeding it with righteousness? I would argue we do both. But let me tell you something. As Roger was back there talking, one of the things that hit me was, I'm amazed how many people are looking for instantaneous gratification. You know why I'm amazed at it? Because I am. And don't tell me you're not. Don't tell me you've never pulled up to a fast food place and got frustrated because it wasn't fast. Right? And don't tell me that when you started this year and you said, I am going to change my lifestyle and I'm going to do what Roger said and I'm going to lose some weight, that when you got up on January the 2nd and you stepped on the scales and you hadn't lost 40 pounds, you thought, what in the world? Isn't that us? We laugh, but isn't that really us? Now let me take the smile off your face for a moment. So I have satiated myself. I have filled myself with sin. I have become overflown with wickedness. I have so much wickedness in me that it's just unbelievable. And I need something instant. And I have it. You want instant sin loss? You want to be able to remove it, not January the 2nd, but instantaneously? He said, I'll tell you what you do. You want to get rid of it? You want to get rid of all that extra weight you're carrying around? The weight of sin is horrifying. And he said, you can do it instantaneously. If you're a Christian, you just say to God and mean it, I'm sorry. I confess to you that I maybe one of those things we talked about today or another list of things. And you know what he does? He takes the weight away. The weight of sin, which does so easily beset us in Hebrews 12:1. So you're not a Christian. Pretty simple. You say, I want that removed. He said, I'll do it. I'll do it instantly. You just believe on me. You just repent. Turn from the way you're going. You confess me as the Son of God. And then you be immersed in water. And I'll do something for you. Not that water, but your obedience will remove every bit of that weight. It's gone forever. You don't ever have to remember that anymore. Isn't that beautiful? I wish physical weight loss was that easy. But it's not. All of this is work on our part. But the main thing we need to remember is we not only have to get rid of it, but we have to talk to God about it. It is His grace that will remove it. But I can't remove it any other way. I do not have the capability, and you don't either. If you have any needs, we'd be glad to assist you. Would you please stand?